Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation with Dr. Carolyn Clancy, Director of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality in the Department of Health and Human Services. And joining us in our conversation is Venetia Lee. Well, Dr. Clancy, in our last segment, you were talking about the partnerships with other government agencies, and I'm curious about, since there are so many stakeholders in the healthcare industry, how you work with the private sector.
We work with the private sector in a variety of different partnerships, which have been, we think, successful and also enormously rewarding for both sides, which I think is the key to any kind of partnership. Probably at the simplest type of partnership we often have is around disseminating information. The idea being that information sent out from a government agency might be helpful, but if I see it coming, for example, from the American Academy of Family Physicians, if I'm a family physician, or the American Academy of Pediatrics, I may pay more attention to it because that organization has deemed that it is credible. So we do a lot of partnerships like that, some for information targeted at professionals, some for information targeted to the public. So, for example, we worked with the American Association of, I guess they're just called AARP now, and to disseminate information about staying healthy over 50. And it's a very simple checklist based on the best possible evidence about which tests and procedures you should be getting, which is in turn derived from what conditions should you be worried about getting, what steps can you take to prevent those conditions, or at least postpone or delay them. And so that's one kind of partnership. Another type of partnership is when an organization essentially says to us, you know, we're having problems with safety and quality. Could we work together to try to do better? And we have a couple of networks that are established capacity to begin to support that kind of partnership. We have a research network of integrated delivery systems across the country, and we also have a network of primary care practices. This is sort of doctors in practice across the country who see patients. Some of them are in small practices, some are in slightly larger practices, but who are very interested in providing the best possible care and also contributing to a larger collegial enterprise. So that's been another type of partnership that we support.
In fiscal year 2000, ARC received $5 million to support and conduct research to improve the ability of the nation's healthcare system to respond to possible incidents of bioterrorism. Can you tell us how ARC's bioterrorism research differs from that being conducted by other agencies?
Sure. You said it well. The focus of the investment that were in the resources we were given was to focus on the role of the healthcare system. At that time, which was before 9/11 and before the anthrax and other episodes, there was a great deal of interest in strengthening the public health infrastructure, but very little public resources going into enhance the healthcare system's response. But healthcare systems were very, very worried about this. Once anthrax hit, of course, suddenly there was a huge demand for information. So the timing of this investment was very, very helpful for us. We had determined that two areas where we could be helpful was one on the use of information technology to provide critical information to the public health enterprise about potential early warning signs. It's still an area of great interest both within the healthcare system as well as within public health. In addition to that, we were very interested in learning how clinicians could be trained to potentially think about this if they saw patients with unusual symptoms. Because one of the scenarios then that people talked about a lot was, suppose someone releases an agent which is not immediate and rapid acting as anthrax was, but is slower, and they release it somewhere like the Super Bowl. So you imagine all these people who are exposed, who then disperse and go back to multiple communities, are being seen by multiple doctors who aren't talking to each other and so forth. So what could we do to help clinicians keep this in the background of their minds as to be suspicious? So at the time, one of the projects we supported was at the University of Alabama. And in order to keep it on people's minds, they had this idea of screensavers. They were focused on emergency department physicians and other professionals. So their idea was to have screensavers that if any time you walked by one of the computers in the emergency department, you know, you might see anthrax or smallpox, keeping it in the back of your mind. Well, once the actual anthrax episodes hit, they didn't need the screensavers anymore. But the good news was that they had developed a website where clinicians could turn, and it's not just a lot of information, although it is a lot of information, but the information is organized in a way to respond to questions that clinicians would have as they're seeing a patient. So instead of being a textbook on anthrax, it's actually actually organized in terms of the symptoms the patients might present with, what laboratory findings you might see, what the x-ray might look like. And in addition to being a very useful source of information, people can also get continuing medical education credits. So a week after the first episode of anthrax, that website was live and, needless to say, was incredibly popular. So that's one kind of work that we support. Another area that we've supported, you've probably guessed that mathematical models are not a trivial part of what we do. In one instance, we were funding a team in New York City to develop a model for how would you provide mass prophylaxis. Anthrax has hit, and you've got to get antibiotics to those people who are at highest risk rapidly. So they developed a model based on the best information that they had, and they were due to test it on September 12th of 2001. Needless to say that testing was postponed a number of months. But essentially, having developed the model, what they then worked with was the police academy, so that they had police cadets sort of running down this pier. Someone would ask them questions and would either give them a placebo or the actual drug. They weren't giving out drugs, of course. They were using different colored M&Ms. But they then went back and refined their model. And this has been something that a lot of states and communities around the country are using.
Let's look out to the future. What role do you envision ARC playing in the healthcare system, say, 10 years from now?
The healthcare system is sort of slowly lurching and catching up to other sectors in terms of becoming part of what might be called the information age. Although we're incredibly excited right now about the power of information technology and the investments we're going to be making this year and into the future, and have begun to see, based on our prior investments, the difference that can make, the reality is that much of medical care still looks a lot like Marcus Welby. A lot of paper, literally all over the place. So what that means is that all of our models for providing care mean that it's rare or unusual to have the information you need literally at your fingertips. What you've got at your fingertips is a chart. You need to leave the room or in some way go elsewhere to get the information that you need. With information technology and the interest in making sure that the inputs to that technology are as evidence-based as possible, what I see happening in 10 years is that more and more people have the information they need and the best and most current information at the point of care, and it will be customized to what they need. So, for example, some of us use Amazon.com. Some of us ought to stop using it so much, but and you note that you can not only buy books there, but periodically they send you emails, or when you log on it says, gee, based on your prior purchases, you might want this. Well, you can imagine a smart system that helps, that knows the type of patients I see, that might even know some of the errors that I've made, you know, or difficult challenges or things I've forgotten before, and is sending me prompts that's that customized. That would be one part of it. Essentially, what I see is that the growth in information technology, as well as the demand for the best possible evidence to guide healthcare decisions, means that the actual delivery of healthcare will not only be a lot better, but our information will essentially be the intel inside, if you will.
Dr. Clancy, the White House announced earlier this year that it was going to expand the e-government initiatives to include grants and health case management. Have these initiatives impacted plans for the future of your agency?
Well, some of those initiatives focus on making the business of running the department more efficient. So, for example, there's always been a little industry in academia and other places that where people track grant announcements, you know, and it's someone's job. It actually could be the job of several people to put out a weekly, sometimes daily bulletin of what grant opportunities there are at the agency or at the NIH and CDC and so forth. You kind of have to know a lot of lingo to do that in a way that's timely and meaningful, because a lot of these solicitations are time limited. Part of the eGov initiative is actually going to allow for one storefront for grants. So that's definitely going to change how we do business, although we think it's actually going to be incredibly helpful to us. Right now, investigators send in paper applications, and they all go to a central place, and then many copies have to be Xeroxed. So there's this time window of 4 to 6 weeks where I know that someone submitted a grant, and it may be at the agency, but it may be somewhere in that process of the massive Xeroxing and so forth. All that will go away. Now, some of that requires you know, the support to have authentication of that it's your application and so forth. But that, I think, is going to be very, very helpful to us.
You've had an interesting career serving the public, and I'm curious, what advice would you give to someone considering a career in public service?
Well, you know, the department just launched a program 2 years ago called the Emerging Leaders Program, born out of some concern looking at the demographic changes affecting the public workforce, as there are many areas, showing that a very high proportion of people will be eligible to retire over the next few years, and also concerned that they weren't attracting some of the best and brightest young people. This program is unbelievable. We've had a number of folks, we've had some who work at the agency for most of their two-year rotation, sort of similar to the Presidential Management PMI program. But they just stay within HHS. A lot more rotate and help us, and they are fabulous. And what's been very gratifying is I think that most of them can see that the work that we do and that others in the department do is very exciting and is making a difference. So my highest hope is that young people coming out of college or graduate school would give a government career serious consideration. There's going to be a huge array of opportunities.
Fred, that'll have to be our last question. We're out of time. We want to thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you. For your listeners who are interested in finding out more about the agency and in particular are interested in information that they can use right now in terms of making their own health care better and safer, our website is www.ahrq.gov.
Thank you very much. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dr. Carolyn Clancy, Director, Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality in the Department of Health and Human Services. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's very interesting conversation. Once again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.